This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 31st, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 171. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary, looking at a wacky week on the West Coast. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature, the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy, the Trudeau Liberal government's pandemic payroll relief program. Luxury real estate agents and supercar dealers got it, but the Pacific National Exhibition doesn't qualify. President Shelley Frost is my guest, and she makes the case for the jewel of East Vancouver. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are there some wacky things happening in the COVID winter on the West Coast? First, the filthy rich CEO of Great Canadian Gaming Corporation resigned in disgrace. It turned out that Rod Baker and his actress wife Ekaterina were the vaccine tourists in the Yukon. The not-so-fabulous Bakers could face up to 6 months in jail for queue-jumping in remote Beaver Creek. The millionaire Moderna mooches made world headlines. But you can bet they're not the only ones using money and power to get the coronavirus vaccine. You just can't make that bet at a Great Canadian Casino in BC because they're still closed due to the pandemic. Vancouver Sun got a free billboard in the downtown east side after reporter John Mackey's look at graffiti in Canada's saddest postal code sparked a satirical graffiti wall critical of the Vancouver Sun. But what's the fuss? Graffiti is but one of the stories in the neighborhood, not the only one. Some use graffiti for artistic expression, others to communicate basic daily information. Some taggers have made lives difficult for people who are just trying to keep their stores and restaurants open. Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou was denied her bid to get rid of daytime security. A judge threw out her application in which she claimed fear of catching coronavirus from her bodyguards. The same judge that allowed her to live in a mansion after her 2018 arrest threw out her application for variance. So Lionsgate Risk Management remains her 24/7 security contractor. And under pressure to stop tourists from bringing the virus to BC, where Whistler is now a hotspot, Premier John Horgan said this.
If you are coming to British Columbia on non-essential travel, you better behave appropriately. You better follow our public health guidelines or we'll come down on you like a ton of bricks.
Horgan did not say if he meant the kind of bricks used in buildings or Lego bricks. Meanwhile, Dr. Henry hit the wrong nerve when she said this.
For the next 2 weeks, I am asking you to do more. Take a step back, stay home, stay away from others, join in our effort to bend our curve.
Most British Columbians have already made great sacrifices. When will Henry do more for us, like mandate masks in schools and be more transparent about government information and data about the virus? Meanwhile, the chief executive of BC Lottery Corporation testified at the Cullen Commission public inquiry on money laundering in BC. Jim Lightbody had been on medical leave to fight cancer since August 2019. On January 28th, Lightbody was cross-examined by commission lawyer Patrick McGowan. Lightbody revealed in his testimony that he received bonus payments based on casino profits. Casino profits that went through the roof after Vancouver hosted the world in 2010.
After the Olympics, there was a massive influx of immigration and wealth from Hong Kong and Asia and China into the lower mainland. Like that was very clear to any of us who were living here at that time. And in fact, I note in my affidavit that I understood from a colleague of mine who is a consultant who was consulting for the state of Massachusetts Gaming Commission. And they were considering opening a couple of casinos in their state for the first time. And there was an RFP out. And one of the respondents to the RFP was Wynn Casinos. And Wynn has casinos in Las Vegas as well as Macau. And Wynn, who's the chairman and CEO, was asked by the commission, why Mr. Wynn, do you want to open a casino in Boston? Why don't you just stay in Las Vegas? And he said, Mr. Commissioner, there's only two places in North America outside of Las Vegas that I would consider opening a casino. One is Boston and the other is Vancouver, Canada. And the commissioner asked him why. He says, because both of these cities have outstanding educational systems, and these very wealthy Asian people want to immigrate to those cities to send their kids to school there and move there or visit there frequently. And when they're there, we like to serve them with the kind of gaming entertainment that they love.
So interesting and nice endorsement. Had any of your investigators or managers or other vice presidents told you that GPEB or law enforcement believed that the cash may be proceeds of crime and part of a money laundering scheme?
We had never heard it directly from the RCMP. There was suspicions, and we had controls to deal with those risks. But this was a actual case of organized crime lending money to patrons who were going to casinos and going and buying real estate and other things that they were using this money service business for. And there was a potential tie-in with transnational terrorist financing. And I was blown away. I said, we need to address this. We need to address it quickly. And as I mentioned earlier today, we did so. We acted immediately.
It was a shock to you in 2015 that the substantial sums of $20 bills that were being used to buy in were proceeds of crime or might be proceeds of crime?
It was a shock to me that there was a international organized crime unit down in Richmond that was using this money service business to lend money to people to buy real estate and gamble and buy cars. And
that was part of the testimony of BC Lottery Corporation CEO Jim Lightbody at the Cullen Commission. The inquiry continues. Go to cullencommission.ca for the webcast schedule.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Japan Times, Japan taking cautious approach to COVID-19 vaccination rollout. The health ministry ran a live exercise in Kawasaki the same week the government said it secured enough shots for 157 million people. Japan has deals with Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca. That is more than enough to cover the 125 million population. The Pfizer vaccine is the only one under review by the health ministry, and it could be approved in mid-February. The Tokyo Olympics are scheduled to begin July 23rd. In Apple Daily, Xi Jinping's down jacket trends online after apparent campaign to support Chinese apparel. Xi's visit to Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics venues dominated China's state TV news January 20th and 21st. Netizens were more interested in Xi's Arc'teryx down jacket. The cobalt blue thermi parka from the Canadian brand and made in China costs $850 Canadian. It is made with waterproof and windproof Gore-Tex. The climbing and hiking wear company Arc'teryx was founded in 1991 in Vancouver, bought by Adidas Salomon in 2002, sold to Emir Sports of Finland before China's Anta Sports came along in 2019. Anta is a sponsor of Beijing 2022, which is set to open February 4th of next year, although human rights groups around the world are calling for a boycott. In the New Zealand Herald, MIQ staffer sacked after bedroom encounter with returnee. MIQ is the managed isolation and quarantine office of the New Zealand government, and a hotel worker in Auckland was fired after an encounter with a person under quarantine. A male hotel staffer delivered a bottle of wine to the room and was later caught inside the bedroom. Pandemic Response Minister Chris Hipkins said the staffer and guest were passing notes, including a message on the back of a face mask. The staffer was in the returnee room for 20 minutes, but Hipkins would not confirm whether the contact included sexual relations. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, majority of downtown Portland merchants say city core is unsafe. 62% of business owners say downtown is no longer safe, three times more than in 2018. The survey by Downtown Portland Clean and Safe found 41% called the pandemic the biggest issue, two times more than homelessness, crime, and protests combined. Protests that consumed downtown nearly every night last summer dwindled in the fall, but there have been several direct action demonstrations in the last several months where downtown businesses have been damaged. In the Seattle Times, late-night freezer failure in Seattle sends hundreds scrambling to get a fast-expiring COVID-19 vaccine. Nurses, firefighters, and volunteers scurried throughout the hospital in a mad-dash scramble to use as many doses of Moderna COVID-19 vaccine as possible before they expired. At University of Washington Medical Center Northwest, word had spread on social media and in text chains like wildfire, bringing a throng of people, mostly too young and healthy to qualify in normal circumstances, to the clinic's doors. The hospital was doing its best to vaccinate those eligible in the state's phased vaccine rollout, but that the main objective was to get it into the arms and avoid waste. Earlier in the week, Oregon healthcare workers stuck on a snowy traffic jam on a highway near Grants Pass gave shots to stranded drivers rather than let the vaccine go to waste. In the Bellingham Herald, Bellingham homeless camp cleared a day early over concerns about agitators, mayor says. Mayor Seth Fleetwood ordered a homeless camp near City Hall to be taken down a day early. A week ago, protesters created a human barrier and later broke into City Hall, prompting city workers to leave in order to stop city officials from attempting to remove the encampment that day. Bellingham police sent more than 40 officers. There were also sheriffs and state patrol officers on the scene, including riot police. Bellingham is about a half hour south of Surrey, BC. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. One of the ways the Trudeau Liberal government kept Canada from falling into a depression in 2020 was the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy. The pandemic job saving program paid up to $847 per week per worker to employers whose revenue fell by 15% or more on a year-over-year basis. More than $59 billion has flowed from Ottawa to employers across the country, including $6.8 billion to employers in BC. In December, Canada Revenue Agency launched a searchable database. Last week, the Breaker.News revealed some of the upscale employers that received the subsidies, such as Ferrari Maserati of Vancouver, the Royal Vancouver Yacht Club and Hollyburn Country Club, Italian tailor Stefano Ricci Vancouver, and Swiss watch boutique Hublot Vancouver, as well as Lahomes Realty and Newstream Realty. Even Lionsgate Risk Management, the court-approved security company in charge of monitoring Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou, around the clock. None of the preceding companies responded to simple questions. I wanted to find out how many jobs were saved and how many dollars were received. But in disclosures to shareholders, Great Canadian Gaming Corporation reported last fall it received $11.6 million in government assistance, while Financial Corporation said it received $3.2 million. Neither said how many jobs were saved. Vancouver International Airport Authority told me it received $15.7 million from the pandemic job-saving program to keep its 425 workers employed during the downturn. One employer that is left out in the cold is public-owned Pacific National Exhibition. My guest is Shelley Frost, president of the P&E. I asked Shelley Frost how she feels about the range of real estate and luxury auto dealers that benefited from the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy, while the P&E is not eligible.
On any given day, we go through an entire range of emotions from disappointment to anger to frustration. And the P&E has always been an organization that's been really proud of the fact that we haven't had to rely on provincial or federal funding and that we've been financially, operationally self-sufficient. But what that's done is it's put us in a position where we don't have the same political connections and we don't have inroads already into funding avenues, which has put us a little bit behind the eight ball. But when I see some of the, you know, to hear that there's an organization out there that came out in 2021 even better than they went in, that's just a devastating statement. For us to sit back and watch every other fair in the across the country, the CNE, the Stampede, Edmonton Klondike Dales, Cloverdale Rodeo, Armstrong Fair, Agri Fair, they're all receiving the subsidy, and they're receiving it just because of by virtue of the way that they're set up. Ours is just simply an administrative technicality about our ownership that's precluding us. And we also, you know, we exist in the event industry. And so when we look at, you know, organizations, great organizations like Jazz Fest, Celebration of Lights, the other festival producers, organizations that are getting the wage subsidy, again, where the P&E is not, is really frustrating, to say the least. And, you know, we play in the venue space as well. So, you know, we look at Rogers Arena and other organizations that are getting the wage subsidy. And in every aspect of what we do, we're falling behind. We have set out, like, we've been talking to everybody that we can. There seems to be a will to want to fix this, yet no mechanism to do that. And we're running out of time. We're really running out of time, Bob. The local MPs that we talk to, they all say the same thing. We'll talk to Ottawa. You know, there's been a number of them that they want to see the P&E survive. They want to see us get that help. But we just seem to be a hot potato in Ottawa. And there's nobody that is stepping up to the plate to make the exception to make sure that we get this wage subsidy. I know that there are other organizations out there that fall in the exact same category that we do. That have been exempt, and they've been allowed to access the wage subsidy, but for some reason we haven't been able to tap into that technicality yet, and so we're gonna stay on it. I am not in any way gonna let anybody forget about what's going on here with the P&E. We're too important. We have a $200 million economic impact. We employ over 4,000 people. 300 people, over 4,000 of those are union jobs. We have 110 years of history and tradition, and I'm not willing to in any way step back and jeopardize that by being too quiet about this. Businesses in the event industry and the tourism industry have just been devastated through this pandemic. Normally, the P&E generates about $60 million a year through all the events that it does and all the activities that we do during the year. When we went into this pandemic, we knew that we were going to lose about $52 million of that last year. So we did everything that we could to make sure that the organization would stay alive. We had to do some incredibly unfortunate layoffs. We had to cut our costs at every corner. We managed to reduce that loss down to $10.5 million, which put us in a position where, as long as it was, you know, kind of just 1 year, we could be in a recovery position, like possibly a recovery position, just being in debt. But there's no doubt about it. Our cost structure, just having such a huge campus, our cost structure is just, it's high. You know, our utilities, our insurance, our site and asset security, things that we can't reduce, those are significant costs that we can't get out of. And so now that the pandemic has been running for so long, we're heading into 2021 and we're not in any better of a position. And it's been really frustrating to see a great program that was meant to really help everybody exclude some really key people.
During 2020, the P&E couldn't open the gates for a traditional fair, so it shifted to a series of successful drive-through events.
With the drive-throughs, I mean, the one thing that I love about the P&E is that we have an incredibly creative team, and we have a team that is willing to, at any moment, just jump in and do whatever they have to do to, you know, put on something different, turn a different leaf over, fly by the seat of our pants. And I love that. We're very entrepreneurial in that way. And when we realized that we were not going to be able to do anything normally, we started with the mini donut drive-through, just really as a way to stay connected to our guests. We knew as well that all the suppliers that come out to the fair and, you know, all of our vendors were also in a hugely jeopardized position because all the fairs were not going to work this year. And so they were going to have nowhere to go and nowhere to make their money. So we wanted to be able to do anything that we could to generate a little bit of employment, to bring some of our people back, to partner with our vendors and our suppliers so that they could get a little bit of work. We wanted to be able to stay connected to our guests so that, you know, during a really tough time, people had something safe that they could do. And our basically our mandate was, let's do this and just try and break even. We don't want to get any further into debt, but we knew that, you know, doing these kinds of things were not going to be a big landslide. It was just really going to be great for the morale of the team and, you know, allow us to really stay connected. So when they took off, you know, we did mini donuts and we just had just such a tremendous response. We ended up doing Father's Day with the barbecue and ribs, which all the dads really liked. We did a Canada Day celebration. We did a BC Day weekend celebration with some local BC products. And then we headed into the fair. And we turned that into a Christmas drive-through with some of the assets that we had on hand from the Aurora event that we did last year. So we're making lemonade out of lemons wherever we can, Bob. And we're taking access to just ideas and assets that we have, and we're doing everything that we can to stay above water and put us in a position where we can come back.
No concerts, no sports, no trade shows. But Hollywood North moved into the P&E.
Film was one of the industries that came back very quickly. They had their COVID protocols in place. And because we knew that we weren't going to be using the Forum building or the Coliseum or Rollerland, and that we were going to have some assets that would be available, we worked very closely with the film industry. And we are really proud to be able to say that every building that we have on site has been fully booked by the film industry all the way through March or June of this year. And so we've got companies like Paramount and Netflix and local production companies that are using our space because space is in high demand. And it's those kinds of organizations coming through as well that are helping to helping the P&E just stay in a position where we hope to be able to be recoverable. Because it's just, you know, you've talked about the wage subsidy, and without that wage subsidy, it jeopardizes our ability to move forward and to recover past 2021.
What's on the horizon for the P&E in 2021?
We are absolutely talking to Vancouver Coastal Health about any of the support services they need. We do have a big campus, and we have made it available to say that if they need the physical space to do a drive-through vaccination site, we'd be happy to participate. I think that would be a great, great use of site. We are still working through what we think we can do in 2021. We are planning for a couple of drive-throughs during the early stages of 2021, where we think there's going to be COVID protocol still in place. We are struggling with the fair, knowing that most British Columbians will be vaccinated by September, still puts the fair at very much in jeopardy. So it's, if we can do a fair, it's going to be a very, very scaled down version. But we're hopeful for the fall, post-September, when we can start bringing some events, festivals, concerts back, consumer and trade shows, family shows, and we have a lot of the promoters that are showing positive outlooks and looking to book and lock into those events. So I see a brighter end to 2021, but 2021 itself is going to put us way much further behind the eight ball financially. And there comes a point in time where we get too deep in debt to reasonably be able to get out as a nonprofit. So that's the line that we're walking right now. And we need to be able to offset some of those losses by recouping the wage subsidy. That will make or break us staying in business.
That was my guest, Shelley Frost, president of the Pacific National Exhibition. Go to pne.ca to keep up to date on the P&E, and go to thebreaker.news to read the stories about who got the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the people behind Eating Disorders Awareness Week in BC. It's on until February 7th. It coincides with Super Bowl. Celebrate responsibly, and celebrate a part, and celebrate in moderation on Super Sunday. For more information on Eating Disorders Awareness Week in BC, go to jessieslegacy.com. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. When you're- that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 31st, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 31st in 1930, 3M rolled out Scotch tape, which was developed by engineer Richard Drew? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.